My mother and my stepfather moved to the North Fork Valley in 1973. At the time, I was in the third grade, and it seemed like, let's see, about 3 or 4 years after that, in their friendship with Campbell Stanton, galvanized a local effort to start a public radio station here. And National Public Radio was in its glory days of really on-the-ground grassroots reporting, and they were covering interesting stories. I think what was characteristic is there was a lot of in-depth inquiry into stories, which led to their tradition of covering gavel to gavel major things that were going on in our country. You know, I think of a number of controversies and things that really the first I was ever exposed to was listening to the radio. I grew up listening to music on the radio. That was always on in my room. And I was a major Top 40 fan, so it was Casey Kasem's Top 40 growing up here in Paonia. But I would, you know, that's how I take information in. It's all audio.
Mm-hmm.
So I can go somewhere and not really remember the color on the walls or the piece of fine art, but I'll remember what someone said. That's just the way I've always taken it in. So I watched my parents, and I guess my first memory of KVNF was actually coming home in the evening, and my mother and my stepfather had convened what would one day become the first board of KVNF, but was a steering committee. And what I remember was the laughter was pealing out to the street as I walked up to the house, and walking in the room, they were laughing so hard that my mom was wiping tears from her eyes. And it was Dave Johnston, who was on the first board of KVNF and was a longtime DJ. And he was just making jokes, and he was an incredibly funny person. So one of the things I always like to remind people about KVNF is that it really started with a ton of laughter, very smart, funny people who just were looking for a connection to the larger world that they had lived in, and that they had moved here to the North Fork, growing gardens, raising children, doing that kind of thing, and still hungry for that connection to art and culture and investigative journalism that you could find in the public media mm-hmm. format. So that was the first I remember of it. So that would have been like early junior high, middle school years. And then the first time I actually was trained and became a DJ was my high school principal at Paonia. And I just have a strong memory of him picking 3 or 4 of us who were involved with student government. We were involved on the debate team and the speech team, and we were involved in musicals and theater. And he said, "I think I might have something for you guys," because he really wanted to challenge us, and he really wanted to have us have an environment where we could take those performing art skills and put them to use. And he was a really visionary, smart, caring guy. And he gave us an independent study hour after lunch. And on that day, he marched us down the street, and there was Campbell. The station had already come off of Garvin Mesa to downtown to the miners' dormitory. And he said, "I have these students, and I think they'd make great radio personalities." So Campbell was delighted, and that launched the Paonia High School Hour, which started in 1979. It was really fun. And then I got so into it, I moonlighted a little bit with Kate Roberts and other adult DJs who were doing different things. But she's the one who started One Woman's Perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a classically trained musician. She was an archaeologist. She was an agronomist, an astrologer. She just had multiple skills and was a very close friend of my family. I ended up spending some time with her while my parents were in Mexico. So Kate and I started doing some evening shows together. And she interviewed me about my experience as a high school student. And things were really rough in my high school at that point. There was a new principal who took it as his mission to kind of ferret out the rabble-rousers. And he was a very strong evangelical Christian, and He had identified me as a rogue, heathen kind of leader among students, and knew that my parents were hippies, and he targeted me. And so she was interviewing me about that, and it ended up kind of galvanizing this big conflict at the school. And I dropped out of high school that same year, but 2 years later, the man was fired, and there were a number of things that kind of came through. So I guess that was my first experience of feeling firsthand in my life the power of the medium, that those conversations could happen, and that people were listening, and that it led to action and awareness. And I thought, wow, that is such a powerful tool.
Do you remember your first moment on the radio? Do you remember your first live moment? Or
yes, I was playing a show with Joe Campbell, who's now he comes from the Campbell family from Paonia, and he's now a software engineer, I suppose. But I found out later he had a crush on me. I didn't know it at the time, and we had picked a whole slate of music to play. And I remember playing the Doobie Brothers' Blackwater song, thinking it was just magic that we could, you know, pick all of our favorite songs off the jukebox from down the street at the malt shop and put them on the air and have people listen to them. So it was quite a magic moment. And fast forward many years later, my son, we moved back to the North Fork, and he was in fourth grade. And we were driving through Paonia, and I had pointed out the radio station and said, you know, your grandma and your grandpa helped start that, and I used to be a DJ there. And he said, park in front, Mama, I want to see the magic. And I didn't know what he was talking about. I said, what do you mean? And he said, I want to see him talk into the microphone and hear it in my car.
It is magic.
It really is. And so we did. We parked in front of KVNF. We could see the DJ. We turned on the radio. And sure enough, the mic break came along, and my son Darby just said, he just said, see, Mama, it's magic. And
so after high school, you went and you studied theater.
I did theater and voice and dance. Performing art always has been just a passion. It's the place that I want to go.
But right after you graduated, that's not exactly the route you took.
Was that cute little baby that ended up saying, see, Mama, it's magic. Really strong desire there to have a family. And I was married to a man who was an Outward Bound instructor. So we spent a lot of time out in the woods, very far away from people. So that whole performing art piece really happened in my mothering more than anything, of the telling of the stories and singing of the songs. And I would put little, you know, mixes of music together for my kids of folk music that I'd grown up with, and just kind of imparted it in that way.
And then how did you become midwife? Because that was, as I understand it, that was your first kind of major career thing that you did.
Yeah, that was a huge calling. And the way that I became a midwife was by actually back to Paonia as well. The same roots of seeing the first baby I'd ever saw born was a home-birthed baby in a tiny little cabin up on Lamborn Mesa, my uncle's little baby. And there was a midwife there. And we all, each had our little jobs and things we could do, but I watched little Jesse be born. And to me, it was just a miracle beyond words. And I had such an affinity for that kind of space where you're waiting for something to come into it, and you have to hold it open, and you have to be strong. And I found that I really rose to that situation. And the next birth was a friend of mine from Paonia High School who became pregnant when she was a sophomore. And so she was little, and she was young, and she was afraid. And I went with her to the hospital, and I was her helper in delivering her baby in high school. And I stood by her when she came to school more and more pregnant and kind of endured the stigma of all of that. And I really began to understand the politics of female anatomy and power. So after leaving high school, I studied the theater and dance, et cetera. And then I switched majors to sociology and women's studies. And those experiences were strong in my mind. And I would say probably the earliest experience was when I was 5 and 6 in Calcutta. My family was living there and there were little babies all over. And I just migrated to them. I had a brother 2 years younger than me. So my mother tells me that from the moment that he was born and I was big enough to hold him, that's what I would always migrate to do. So I kind of think that midwifery thing got started way, way back. Mm-hmm. But it evolved to a place where after my children were born and since I'd been to the home birth and known that tradition here in the North Fork Valley, which I always thought was very beautiful. It seemed like kids were really healthy and people helped each other. And I thought it was beautiful. And so I had my children at home and then two or three other women just, you know, having babies and they were looking to me for advice about various things. And then they'd invite me, could you just come? And then the midwife in the San Luis Valley called and said, I think you're really good at this. And I wonder if you would like to apprentice with me. So it started in the old school apprenticeship way, mm-hmm. where it really, it wasn't an idea that I made on an academic level that, oh, okay, this is what I want to do. It was more like I just kept being asked to be there. And at one point there was the baby was pretty blue. At one of the births, the midwife was doing something. And I had that sort of shiver run down my spine of, you should no longer be here if you don't have more skills. Because people are already looking to you as some kind of knowledge base, but you haven't polished it. You don't know what you're doing. Mm. So I committed at that point to a course of study that took five years.
And then how long did you practice midwifery?
I practiced for another 5. I think I caught close to 400 babies in that time. Yeah.
Now, I know some people might think it's so weird that there must be a strange transition between midwifery and being the manager of a community radio station, but I think they might have a few things in common.
I have found that the experience of midwifery has informed me as a manager probably more than anything else. I mean, if you think about it, community media in particular is a creation, a collective creation of the talent and abilities of a group of people. And so each time something happens in community radio, it happens as groups of people come together and share themselves. So there's a lot of psychology involved. There's a lot of the creative process, which pregnancy is an ultimate creative process, and you take a seed inside of you and you gestate that idea, and then it grows and you let it out through the airwaves. So there's definitely birth metaphors there. I think particularly for KVNF, it was at a time in the history of this radio station where a whole new level of being, and that included the physical space all the way to the creative product and content that came out the other end, needed to evolve. It needed to become something larger. And it had sort of grown by listenership, but it hadn't grown organizationally. So I was actively practicing midwifery at that time and towards the end of my career in it, because it was an impossible way to make a living and the healthcare system was a joke. And so you had no support or backup, and it was making me feel more and more stressed. And so during that whole time, I was serving on the board of KVNF and I'd gone back to DJing here. But I really saw that the organization was the pregnant mom, and it needed care, and it needed encouragement and needed someone to believe in it in a really new way. And I could bridge the group of folks who founded KVNF with the group of people who'd become more recently involved with it. And I think that was very important. We've talked about Felix Belmont and how he could bridge the business community to the nonprofit of KVNF. And I felt like what I could bring to the table was bridging the history and the beginning of KVNF and my heartfelt connection to that as a child to the here and now of it. And it needed a better space. It needed more formal ways of communicating, and it needed more professional ways of raising the funds to carry it forward. So I kind of approached it as a pregnant mom and how to make sure that we made a really healthy thing come out of the other side of all of our efforts. So the building itself kind of became the birth. And there were all the things that led to, you know, the building happening that were very resonant for me about going through a pregnancy with someone where you have to, you know, first integrate, yes, this is happening, and next integrate, this is what it's going to take to make sure this happens, and then next integrate, who's going to help us do this, and are we prepared on the other end of it, because once it happens, we're off and running. And I went down that sort of model of care approach to a capital campaign, and that's kind of how the midwifery thing got connected to KVNF.
Well, obviously, the building is, I think it would certainly be pointed to as your hugest accomplishment here. Do you feel that way?
I do. I think the building was why I was here, mm-hmm. and what I came here to do. And I'll tell you, I could see it. I could see it in my mind's eye when I went into the old KVNF building. And not to put it down, because it was an incredible nest for many, many years, and it served everybody well. And I have many fond memories, actually, of doing radio there and being part of it. But I also felt that in the confines of that physical space, there wouldn't be ever a broad enough spectrum of the general public that would be invited into it to make us true public service media. And in these rural areas, I have a very strong belief that we are here to serve everyone. And you're not going to get them all to come in and love KVNF or even listen necessarily, but the lens needs to be serving the public interest. That's what this spectrum of the airwaves was designed for, and it's why it's not cluttered with advertising, and it's why it's not owned by a media mogul. The intention is for us to exercise our First Amendment rights in the most creative, highly evolved way we know how to as human beings. And I think that I saw a new building as a way to unify people, to stay focused on the beauty of KVNF. And I guess after many years of being away, I came back and I saw that this is just a really high caliber group of people with tremendous creativity and talent. And why were we holding ourselves in a space that didn't have enough room for us, that was blocked up and had us all kind of stepping on one another's toes, that had mold in it, that didn't feel as aesthetically inspiring? And my training in performing art, one thing it showed me was it really does matter where you are creating those kinds of art pieces. And the more inspiring a space can be, the better the content is. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like singing in a cathedral. In a whole group of people, you understand some of what the architecture is all about in a whole different way. So I felt that this was a grand accomplishment of this region to have this fine radio station. And I knew so many other towns felt that way because obviously it grew. And I just thought it was time for us to claim that and a building would help us do it. And I think I was influenced by Maria Montessori. My sister was a Montessori teacher. My mom was certified in Montessori. They were very involved with that at the time. And I thought about the way Montessori classrooms are set up so that there's, you know, practical life and sensorial, and there's all these, and you build that environment and the children can interact with it. And bring their creativity to the table, and it's not always dictated to them. And I thought, oh, that's a beautiful metaphor for community radio. So if you build the building and set it up so that the people can come and begin to play in it and tap into their creative side, then great content things will happen. And so the building was this tangible way that I felt I could contribute, bring the relationships of the past together with the relationships of the present, and elevate an organization that I truly feel makes just an incalculable contribution to the quality of life here every single day.
From my point of view, one of the major things that's happened is the increase in news programming and the quality of it, which was took a long time to happen here at KVNF. And the buildings seem to really foster that.
Well, for one thing, you couldn't do it in the old building. I did plenty of interviews in that studio space, like many of our stalwart volunteers have done. And you'd bring a band in, and they were in the on-air studio spilling out onto the street. You would try and interview like a county commissioner. I remember Ken Salazar, for heaven's sakes, when he was running for Senate, we were in the old building, and people would just be sweating buckets, dark, stepping over gnarled piles of wires, et cetera. And it was hard to imagine that they took us seriously, and it was hard to take ourselves seriously with regard to news in particular. I think the creative part of it and the community that it built was just as strong then as it is now and just as beautiful. But the serious work of actually producing informative programming that serves the public interest was very hampered by the equipment and the size. So you just couldn't do it. So an additional thing was that, I know Jeff Reynolds likes to call it overgrown, homegrown. It was always homegrown radio, but you cobbled it all together. And we did that administratively as well. So you'd have someone working that had this particular skill set, and they would bring this to the table. And if this other kind of skill set was lacking, it just didn't happen. And so there wasn't a full spectrum of stepping back saying, how do we design an organization for excellence? How do we make sure that policies stand the test of time and context? How do we make sure that our financial procedures set us up with a safety net and with confidence that we're going to be operating a year out, 2 years out? So we renovated the building and the organization simultaneously, because you couldn't bring what was down the street into this and have it reach its full potential. But all along with the building, even the day we moved in, which was on KVNF's birthday in 2006, and we carried the little box down the street and went dead for a moment on the air and plugged that in. And the very first call was, can I say that? It was my mom. And she was in Mexico listening and sent flowers. It was sweet. So I think that at that point, what I knew was the next frontier is the programming. So we built it. We fulfilled this promise to ourselves that we could lift ourselves up and be a fuller spectrum service to the people around us and make a space that truly was fitting for the level of creative genius that goes on here on a daily basis. And the next step was, how do we make it better? And this was, now we have a facility that, you know, an elected official, Senator Mark Udall, comes right in here, sits in this production studio with me. We have a very, you know, good chat here about his quest for the Senate seat. And the list goes on. Bands come through town and they talk about us around the country because they roll into this little town and they walk into the bamboo room and there's a drum set for them and there's a piano for them. And there's, you know, we're able to mix the sound in a way that even the bands really enjoy listening to. So it just lifted us past a stuck place. It's kind of, you know, back to the midwifery metaphor. It's like, oh, you know, 8 centimeters, you just got to get to the 10. That's kind of what it was. And this was the full opening here to make it happen. And I have found that over the years we've been in here, the last 7 years, almost seven, the level of participation by a broader spectrum of the community than had previously been involved has just increased every year.
Mm-hmm. What's your biggest lesson from your tenure here?
To trust my instinct. That we sort of marinate in a cult of the expert in contemporary life, and I think it's perilous to lose a connection to your own heart and what you really feel about why you're involved in something and why it matters. And that instinct is what has motivated me onward through my hardest days ever in the last 10 years have been staying really clear and focused on what the gift of this radio station is to me personally, but to the larger community that I care about.
Thank you.
My pleasure.